And I had one man come up to me after the show, and he said, "My wife dragged me to the show. I didn't want to come, but you made me laugh and you made me cry, and that surprised me."
Welcome to All About Jack, a podcast about all things related to C.S. Lewis. All About Jack is a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com and is celebrating 10 years of podcasting in 2021. I'm your host and the creator of the show, William O'Flaherty. I've written two books related to Lewis. Learn more about them at the end of the show. Have you ever wished you had an evening to be able to talk with C.S. Lewis? Or at least hear him speak? Of course, that's not possible, or is it? Today, David Payne is joining All About Jack to primarily discuss a one-man play he's done for over 20 years entitled An Evening with C.S. Lewis. Welcome to All About Jack, David.
Nice to be here.
Well, now, while An Evening with C.S. Lewis is not the only production you do, it is the one you've done the most. But before we get into that play, let's take you back to how things started by asking you how you got into acting and more specifically playing the role of Lewis.
That was in around about 1995. I had gone to Nashville to work on a music project for a British company who wanted to set up an office in Nashville. And coming to the end of what was going to be a two-year contract, I saw a little display ad in a theatrical bulletin, a community theater that did all their shows at the Tennessee Performing Arts Center, which is the main performing arts center in Nashville. And they were talking about the show Shadowlands, which is, as many people will know, it's the stage version of the relationship between C.S. Lewis and his wife Joy Gresham, who was Joy Davidman originally, and the play was being put on by this theatrical company. And they were auditioning for roles, and it said, "Auditions for Shadowlands, British accent, so help." I thought, well, I've got a British accent. Had one for a long time. So I called the number. It was actually that night. It always makes me laugh that had I called the next day, I wouldn't even be speaking to you now because the audition was that night. So I called the number that it said to call. I said, "Look, I haven't been on stage before. The only thing I can claim is to have a British accent. Is there any point in me coming?" And they said, "Well, yes, because it's community theater. So even if you only get a small part, that might happen." So I went along hoping to get a small part and won the lead role of C.S. Lewis, and that's where it all started.
Ah, fascinating. Well, now, what can people expect to hear and learn from An Evening with C.S. Lewis, a show you've done, as we mentioned before, more than a few times?
Well, in the actual stage performances, we've done well over 1,000 performances, well over. What people can expect to hear or learn, however you put it, is the setting is that he's at home and it's near the end of his life. He's had a heart attack, but he's on the mend. And there's a group of American writers who are visiting Oxford, and they have asked if they can meet with Lewis, and so he entertains them at his home. And they're basically there for him to give a sort of potted history of his life. And that's exactly what he does. It's a very informal setting. It's not a drama as such. It's C.S. Lewis just chatting to a bunch of people about the events and the people that shaped his life. People like J.R.R. Tolkien, how he became a Christian, how he went from atheism to Christianity. To some extent, why he wrote the books he wrote. And of course, the lady that turned his life upside down, the American lady whom he eventually married, and of course suffered the intense loss when she died, which gave birth to the book he wrote after she died, A Grief Observed. It's full of humor. Douglas Gresham, C.S. Lewis's stepson, said you could not be in a room with C.S. Lewis for more than 5 minutes without there being lots of laughter. So people will probably come along and be surprised how much they laugh. They might also be surprised how much they cry. I was doing this show and I had two or three ladies on the front row. And when we got to the part where he talks about his wife, and especially about the loss, I could see them both with handkerchiefs wiping the tears away from their eyes. And I had one man come up to me after the show, and I don't know which one it was, and he said, my wife dragged me to the show. I didn't want to come. He said, but you made me laugh and you made me cry, and that surprised me.
Oh, fascinating. Yes, it's you can often get a wide range of reactions, and definitely in terms of the laughter, that's something that was very important to Lewis, but yet there is lot of sad elements to it that people can relate to as well. And and the next question touches on that in terms of, you know, are there ways in which the play has changed over the years, either in content or how you portray him? I'm aware that around 7 years ago your first wife died. How did that impact your performance?
Well, talking in the general sense, the play has changed since I first started performing it, and to this day, the play has changed both in content and in the way I portray him, because I think that probably any actor worth his salt, if he plays a character or does a play for as long as I've done, needs to be finding something new to keep the play fresh. And and so, yes, the content has changed because there's items I left out, because there are other items I wanted to include, but I didn't want to. The key was what to include and what to exclude, because if you wanted to put everything in, people would be saying, well, when is this ever going to end? So that's a continuing process. It doesn't change much these days, because there comes to a point where you say, right, I think that's where I need it to be. In terms of portraying him, I think, most actors who are playing one character for so long will inevitably develop their portrayal, which is a development in timing, in expressions, and so to that extent, the play has changed a lot. So if you see the play when it was even 10 years ago and you see the play now, I think most people would say, gosh, it has changed quite a bit. It's not so much in content, but the way I portrayed Lewis. In terms of the impact on the way play change after my wife died, it did in one aspect, obviously. In the play, Lewis talks about his wife dying, how she died with bone cancer, and he reflects on the impact it had on his life. And of course, anybody who's read A Grief Observed knows that he was thrown into an utter chaos and crisis, even to the point where I don't think he actually lost his faith, but he considered whether, you know, God is a good God to the extent everybody says he is. And so when I played that before my first wife died, it was obviously without that experience. And I would think that anybody would believe and understand why you will never play it quite the same again when you've been through it yourself. And so, yes, that had an impact on the way I play that scene.
Okay. Now, considering people will hear this long after the time we're recording, which is in the mid-September 2021, what's the best way for people to find out the tour schedule for An Evening with C.S. Lewis and the other productions that we'll touch on?
You can go to birdandbabyproductions.com, birdandbabyproductions.com. Now, when you go to it, you might find that it might say it's reconstructing. We're working on it right now. By the time this airs, it may well be done, but that's where you will find it, birdandbabyproductions.com.
Okay, and we'll have a link in the show notes. And at the time we're recording, if people are listening soon afterwards, you have it's going to be coming to Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, Minnesota, I'm seeing Connecticut, and New York, and then there could be some other dates. You said the I know the one that I'm getting ready to see, and that by the time this airs, I probably would have seen, wasn't listed on the website. So I don't know. Are there dates past mid-November that you have booked right now?
There are dates past mid-November. We have just introduced a brand new show, that's called Christmas Eve with C.S. Lewis, and it really is going to play over Christmas. So as it's a brand new show, we will be starting it in Springfield, Missouri, the weekend before Thanksgiving, and then we will be going up to near Bakersfield, California, the week after Thanksgiving, and then we do a run in December, which will be over two weekends. The first two weekends in December, we'll start on December the 2nd and finish on December the 12th. And so I forget how many shows, but I think we're talking about 12, 13 performances. And that's the new Christmas show, which is Lewis, again, a setting of informality, talking about what Christmas means to him.
Ah, excellent. Yeah. Now, I also noticed there are some shows, or I'm sorry, there's eight different shows listed, and I think you mentioned before we started recording there's one that you're testing, so there could be there should be a ninth before too long, but currently at the moment, or at least listed on the website, the only other one that I saw was Lewis and Tolkien of Wardrobes and Rings. Can you tell us some about that production?
Yeah, we've reduced it down to, I think, just Lewis and Tolkien. And that is set, again, in the latter years of their friendship. And the idea is that they come together for the very last time because of Lewis's health. Tolkien is aware that Lewis is not a well man. They've had many years of friendship. There was a period when it cooled, when it wasn't as strong as it originally was at the beginning of their friendship. But both of them come together and realize how important that friendship was to them and how important it still is. And so they reminisce, they talk about the past, they celebrate the past, they reflect on some of the things they wrote and why they wrote it. They reflect on what some people say about them and how they feel about that. But above all, they reflect on the joy of true friendship.
Oh, sounds very interesting. I hope it might come around near where I'm at, as well as some of the other ones that's listed on the website here. And in fact, let's go ahead, even though the other plays didn't have anything listed at the moment, go ahead and summarize at least a few of them, you know, as many as you want, but give a summary of at least some.
There are the two plays that have got more than two characters in, which makes it hard to tour. So we don't really tour them. Every now and then we'll put them on in my city in Nashville, which is where we live. My wife and I live now. My new wife, we live there. half the time, and maybe half the time in England. But one is called Weep for Joy. And what it was a play in which I wanted to look at a grief observed in a way that would make people realize how Lewis reacted to the death of his wife. So in order to make the play work, you've got to find out what you need to show the relationship they had. And so that primarily is in the first half of the play. And it features Brother Warney, the American lady, Joy Gresham, or Joy Davidman, however you want to call her, and of course, C.S. Lewis. And the first half is much about them meeting and how they got married, etc. Warney's reaction to it, because he wasn't in favor of the marriage in the early days. And then in the second act, it's Joy has died, and now Lewis has got to cope with this. And he starts, as we know, writing this daily note in this daily notebook. And that deals with that period and sort of pulls out some of the emotions that he had and that people will find in A Grief Observed if they read the book he wrote after Joy has died. And so Warney becomes very important as a support to Jack. And of course, Jack has his differences with God, because in the early days, he wasn't very happy about it. So that's Weep for Joy. Then there's another play called St. Jack and the Dragon. There are two ladies in Lewis's life. Well, three ladies, actually, that were very important. His mother, who died when he was 9 years old, Joy, whom he married. And then a lady in between those two called Mrs. Moore, M-O-O-R-E. He called her Minto. Nobody knows why, but he did. And she had a son called Paddy. Her husband had walked out years ago. She also had a daughter. And Paddy and Lewis were thrown together when they were training for the First World War. They were billeted together. They developed a friendship to the point where they agreed, particularly on Paddy's side, that if anything happened to Paddy in the war, Lewis would take responsibility of looking after his mother and his sister. And Paddy did get killed in the war. Lewis honored his promise and honored it to the very end when Mrs. Moore died. The problem was, particularly as she got older, she got more and more difficult to live with. And the impressive thing, and one of the great things about Lewis that I liked, and I think should be admired, is that despite that, he was as faithful to his promise to look after, even though some people thought he should have got rid of her a long time ago and sent her off living somewhere else. And he didn't. And I wanted to explore that, because if Jack and Joy, their relationship was very much about Eros love, Jack and Mrs. Moore, or Minto as he called her, was very much, in my opinion, about, from Jack's side, agape love.
Mm-hmm. Yes, most definitely, yes. Well, those are great shows, and as you noted, hopefully by the time maybe that this is posted, which will be within a week or so after we record, that your website will be updated, but people will be able to find
it. Yeah, I'm sure it will be. We're actually been talking about it this weekend. Can you believe my management team was here, and we at Salt Lake City, and we've been sorting it out.
Oh, good. Well, I'm just noting in case, you know, I know whenever I visit a website and I'm having trouble with it, it's like, oh, forget it. But so if for some chance you go by and there's some trouble, just be sure to go back later to check it out. And then I will, you know, have contact information, or I'll get with you afterwards to maybe get those other dates that are booked that aren't listed yet. Mm-hmm. Or if it's updated and whatnot, I can include it in my show notes so people can, you know, track down where you're going to be at with the different plays and such, because we want people to be able to enjoy these shows that you have put together. Well, now, in addition, though, to being on the stage, you're also, as you might say, behind the mic with one of the translations of the Bible. How did that come about, and where can people hear it?
Oh, it came about some years ago. There was a new translation called the Holman Christian Standard Bible, and it was a publisher, an American publisher. I think probably they were Southern Baptist, the actual publishing company. But what they did is they brought a whole load of very good scholars together and created a translation which was very worthy, and partly because although there were other new translations, they, as knowledge goes on about the languages of the past, we learn new things. And so the translation brought lots of that into it. I liked the translation very much, and they approached me to see if I would be willing to do their audio version. It seems that every Bible has to have an audio version. And so I did. It took me a year and a half to do. And the way people can, they don't have to pay for it to listen to it. There's a, my website is David Payne Reads the Bible. All they've got to do is go on there and they can download it even, and or just listen to it. But, and then as an offshoot of that, I did a play when they did the, when they launched the full Bible, the publisher, they asked me if I would present a play using the text of the Bible. And I didn't know what to do, but I decided on Paul, the Apostle Paul. And I put him, the inspiration was I remember reading through Timothy, and I was very moved about that relationship, you know, almost like father and sons, certainly spiritual father and spiritual son. And you almost get the feeling that Paul is passing on the baton. He's writing from prison, and he's passing on the baton to Timothy and encouraging him. And it's very tender, very moving. And I thought, oh, I would love to have been with Paul and Timothy in the room and just listen to that conversation, to see it, to not just to be able to read it, to hear it. And so I thought, oh, you know, it'd be interesting if I wrote a play where Paul would be talking to someone rather than writing a letter to someone, but it would include a lot of the passages of Paul that we know very well. And so that rather than people reading it, they would hear it. And so the play is about an hour long. It's almost 90% of it is scripture, just straight out of the this Bible translation. I don't do it so much now, but if anybody ever asks me to do it, I like to do it because I love the script. I love the scripture. I love the that translation. And funny enough, I love listening to what I did. And that sounds very pompous, but you're reading scripture, so you should like it, shouldn't you, really?
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah, that shows sounds interesting. And then I was fascinated. I haven't gone back in yet. I do listen to a variety of translations, and it's nice where you can, you know, download it or listen to it online. So it's quite easy for people to access it. And yeah, that's a good translation for people to hear. Well, now getting back to Lewis, you know, because it's unfair to ask someone who has read a lot of his books, you know, for a favorite, what are some of the titles that you especially enjoy the most, or you've been reading more recently that's struck you especially?
Well, obviously, I because I share the same Christian belief as Lewis does, I enjoy a lot of his, you know, his religious writings. Obviously, the one Mere Christianity. But funnily enough, I think one of my favorite books, it's actually a very short book. Tolkien thought it was far too short. but it's called Till We Have Faces, A Myth Retold. And it's a story about, it's a retelling of the Cupid psyche myth. And it's just a lovely book to read. It's, as I say, it's not very long. So I guess that's my most favorite. Now, I am told, and I think, I don't know where I read it, and so I'm not going to say this is absolutely true, I think it is, that when he wanted to write that book on a number of occasions, but never could find the form, he actually went through a time when there was writer's block, and that's when he met Joy Gresham for the first time, and her conversation and the discussions they had about his ideas and about the ideas for that book enabled him to find the form. So I'm pretty sure that I think the book is dedicated to her, if I'm not mistaken. And I think he felt that she almost should have had half the royalties because her input was so invaluable. And whether it was because she did help him a lot, I don't know. But it is recorded that Till We Have Faces is Lewis's favorite book, even though it didn't do very well in sales.
No, it didn't. Yeah, that's one of the ones that people are at least familiar with among Lewis's writings. But
well, they're missing out. That's what I said.
Yes, yeah, I very much enjoyed that. I mentioned before we began recording that my background training is in mental health counseling. And so I remember reading it back when I was younger in the 1980s. I'm still finishing up my schooling and such, but I really liked the, as you might say, the psychological portrait that he paints in terms of the various characters. It's quite mm-hmm. fascinating. And then in terms of like the influence of his wife, yeah, definitely. I know a friend of mine, Andrew Lazo, he's been working on a book about Till We Have Faces, and he's going to be sharing some stuff that, that grounds that more in terms of the impact and how much influence that she did have with that book. All right. Well, then now returning to the play, An Evening with C.S. Lewis. Let's wrap up with have you summarizing what people will experience by seeing the show.
Well, I think I said earlier they'll enjoy a lot of aspects of it. They'll enjoy the humor because Lewis Wells' humor. They'll enjoy finding out about his relationship with Tolkien. They were great friends. They'll find out why Lewis nearly abandoned the Narnia Chronicles, which he did nearly abandon it. They'll find out why The Lord of the Rings owes a lot to C.S. Lewis, which it does. They'll find about the relationship with his brother, Warnie, and that's a very tender relationship. And, of course, the big turning point in his life. You know, when Lewis says, as he did to a colleague in the latter years of his life, he said, I never knew the happiness that passed me by in my 20s would happen in my 60s. And that was referring to his marriage to Joy Gresham. And the play shows why that was so important and why it made such an impact on Lewis's life, and that's why her death did as well. So it's a play with lots of aspects to it. I get so many reactions after the play. People come up to me and after a play and say, you know what, I really feel as though I've met C.S. Lewis. I thought it was just C.S. Lewis speaking just to me, that type of thing. Because the play has that intimate feel, people get drawn in and so many people say, I forgot it was an actor and I almost could have believed it was C.S. Lewis. Well, you can't pay an actor a higher compliment than that. And so I'm always happy to get those sort of reactions. You know, I did an early show for a C.S. Lewis Society, which was done at the University of California in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And they did a video of it, but because it was done in the University of California premises, the video ended up on a series they did, and I didn't know it. I later found out that they did, and about 2-3 months ago, it on YouTube, it just passed 1 million views.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Now, you can go to, for instance, I did an evening with C.S. Lewis in Chicago, and there were two reviews by the two main papers. And they really were very negative about the play. And yet, you only had to be in the audience. It was standing ovation every night, cheering, etc., etc. I don't know what those reviewers came along to hear. They obviously didn't hear it. The trouble with some reviewers is they come along with a preconceived idea of what they want, and if they don't get it, they think, well, it wasn't, it's not no good for anybody else. So, but from me, my point of view, I have, the only reason I'm still doing an evening with C.S. Lewis after 20 years and doing it more than I've ever done before, apart from COVID, of course, but doing it more than I've ever done before is because people keep wanting to come and see it. People don't come and see something that's not any good. It's like a great song. You keep listening to it because it's good. People don't, YouTube thing gets 2,000 or 3,000 views every day now. By the end of this year, it will probably have gone past 2 million views. And why? Because people think it's good. The critics can say what they want, and I'm not against critics. All I know is the only critic that matters to me, seriously, is the critic that watches it on video and sits in a theater seat and watches me on stage. What they say matters, and they seem to give me a big thumbs up every time.
Ah, yes. Well, before we started recording, I'd mentioned to you that way back in 2000, I lived in Kansas City, and I remember seeing you there doing this, and I'm looking forward to, again, by the time this is aired, and I'll have probably, at the end, I'll note having seen it and such, but I do look forward to it, because Lewis's life is very fascinating, and you've done a great job in portraying him. And so we definitely encourage people to check out your website, which again is birdandbabyproductions.com. And I'll have a link in the show notes for people to be able to check that out. And then we encourage people to check that out, as well as other shows, and to go out and see David Payne and the Bird and Baby Productions. Well, David, thank you for being on All About Jack.
It's my pleasure.
And thank you for listening to this episode of All About Jack, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, I'm William O'Flaherty, your host, as well as the creator and producer of this podcast. All About Jack is celebrating 10 years of podcasting in 2021. Be sure to visit EssentialCSLewis.com for a variety of content, including various articles about quotations credited to Lewis that he might not have written. Also, consider checking out my YouTube channel, Knowing and Understanding C.S. Lewis. There's a link in the show notes to it. Today, you heard an interview with David Payne, the British actor most known for An Evening with C.S. Lewis, a one-man play. I noted earlier that I saw him perform it over 20 years ago in Kansas City. Since recording the interview with David, I saw the play when it was in Charleston, West Virginia on September 25th, 2021, and I enjoyed it very much. The audience definitely appreciated David's humor in his portrayal of Lewis, as they laughed very often. So be sure to catch him if he is ever close enough to you to see. You'll find a link in the show notes to his website, birdandbabyproductions.com, which at the time I'm releasing this interview has not been updated as David had hoped. So if you have trouble getting to the site, then it is likely updating and will be available before too long. There's also a link in the show notes to David Payne Reads the Bible. That is a website where you can hear him read the Bible. Speaking of those notes, you can find them at EssentialCSLewis.com and look for this show. But it might be just as easy to find them where the podcast is hosted, which is allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. You can also listen to All About Jack via iTunes, see the show notes for a direct link to it there, and consider rating my show on iTunes to help others find it. And of course, please consider sharing this show so others can hear it. Before closing out, in case you didn't know, I've written two books related to C.S. Lewis. Buying them is a great way to indirectly support this podcast, so it can continue to be made freely available. In 2018, The Misquotable C.S. Lewis was published. It explores 75 quotations credited to Lewis. Most are not by him, some are paraphrases, and a few are ones that could be misunderstood without more context. Then in 2016, my first book was released. It's an enhanced study guide to the Screwtape Letters, humorously called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell. Learn more about it and get a free PDF sample by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. Finally, thank you again for listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty.